Hi guys, and welcome to Health Tech Matters. Today our guest is Nikon Cassis, copy and content lead at BetterUp, previously standards editor at Headspace. His signature achievements include creating a 19-team cross-functional QA and editing process for Headspace, monthly review and release of 3,000 pieces of digital content for the Walt Disney Company. Interesting fact. Nikon runs a financial literacy club for women and hosts bi-monthly meetup. Welcome to the podcast, Nikon. You're right now copy lead at BetterUp. And previously you've been a standards editor at Headspace, right?
Correct, yeah.
Just to start with, what was one of the most memorable projects from these experiences?
Let me see. Well, I think at Headspace, it would have to be when we all went into lockdown for COVID. I just remember every team across the company mobilizing really, really fast and responding to the situation in a way that could be helpful for not just our members, but for people everywhere. So we actually did an entire sort of landing page as a response to COVID-19, and we put together special meditations and sleep casts that would be free to everyone. And we started thinking about, okay, how can we start creating content that's around new stresses from the pandemic? And a lot of people were losing their jobs and a lot of people were trying to figure out how to work from home. So we were like, okay, how do we also talk to that? How do we also talk to really hard hit areas like New York? And so Andy recorded some really special videos. We managed to get a lot of Headspace to a lot of people for free, like everyone in Los Angeles County, everyone at the NHS in the UK. Our educators program was something that was already live, but we were able to remarket that again. So for teachers, for admins, anyone in the school support system could get free Headspace. And that project just meant so much to me, because we were doing something that was helpful for people and we weren't asking for anything in return, and that really meant a lot. So that was probably the most exciting thing of the past year and a half. And then now at BetterUp, there are so many wonderful projects that I'm working on right now, and some of them I can't talk about yet, but we did just publish a full page letter to Simone Biles in the New York Times. And that is something that I am so proud of, and how the team all came together to publish an entire social campaign and write this really beautiful letter, basically supporting her decision to take care of her mental health, because mental health is health, and that vulnerability is a strength, and that you're not being weak by taking care of yourself first, because when you take care of yourself, you can actually be there for everyone and everything else in your life at 100, instead of just giving what little you have left. It's like that metaphor of putting on your own, you know, oxygen mask first before helping others, because if you're in a better state of mind and a better state of being and your well-being is high, you're going to be able to be there for everything else you do. And so that response has also been one of my favorite and most recent projects that I was able to be a part of.
Yeah, it sounds so inspiring. And actually, how did you even get this idea of publishing a letter? It's just something naturally standard.
Yeah, I am actually not sure. Obviously, someone brilliant on our marketing team came up with that. And I was just sort of briefed in, like, okay, we want to write this letter. Thank you, Simone, just sort of became something that someone said and we stuck with it. We were like, oh, thank you, Simone. Like, that should be the hashtag. That should be the whole thing. And that's how we should start off our letter, because while she was receiving so much beautiful support in the media and online, there were also a lot of people that just straight up were not happy with her decision and felt like it was the wrong move. And they had a lot of not very nice things to say about her. So we were like, okay, let's be supportive and bold and just thank her for taking care of herself and being, because she's someone who's in the spotlight and is one of the greatest athletes of all time, that really just got a lot more of attention than just someone like you or me being like, I need to tap out for the day. I need a mental health day, because she's on the world's biggest stage making such a big statement. We were like, let's thank her, and let's just thank everyone else while we're at it for standing up for themselves, because it is something we truly believe in at BetterUp, and I'm sort of looking at, I have the newspaper draped on my couch over here, and I'm just sort of looking at it and just like, yeah, it's great. And something beautiful that came out of that is we are offering BetterUp coaching to everyone who signs up this week for the next 3 months. And it's just wild. It's something we've never done before. So I'm hoping that a lot of people can get something really valuable out of it and just be more vocal in how they feel and feel empowered to stand up for what they need.
Yeah, yeah. That's amazing that you're supporting activities outside of the company. And what about inside the company? Do you have any kind of internal procedures how you help people support their mental health?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's such a great company to work for because they really do believe in supporting people and bringing your whole self to work. Sometimes we can feel like we have two different sides to who we are, right? There's who we are outside of work, and then there's who we are inside of work. And so something that's really encouraged at BetterUp is to just be yourself and have those difficult conversations, be vulnerable, speak up when you want to say something or have a hard conversation. And I found I've been supported firsthand with that. I mean, I've had a couple of difficult conversations just when I've wanted to express how I'm feeling or maybe add a certain perspective to a project that's been working on. And it's always been incredibly valued. And we have really open and honest conversations with each other that are incredibly respectable. And at the same time, we're also fully supported by all of just the benefits that we have. So we have full access to coaching. And so we get to actually use the product, which is great. I've had my coach now for 6 months and it has been amazing. I did not know what I was going to get out of it. I did not know how I was going to be helped, but it really is just amazing. And I meet with her once a week and she is my complete support system. She's my rock. I can talk to her about anything. And she always has like a fresh perspective for me and helps me work through things and points me in the right direction and gives me things to read and work on and introspections. And so that's really great. And we also just have things like a flexible time off policy. We have a flexible remote working from home policy. And it seems like from everything that our founders say and all of our managers, we truly believe in you can do great work from anywhere. So we have people all over the country. We're expanding to Europe and I work fully remote and it's changed my life. I don't have to do a 1.5 hour commute anymore. And I can just wake up and be in my space, in my zone. And I get to do the work that I love from a place of comfort. So I feel like we are supported in a lot of different ways internally as well. Like I said, the coaching is a huge part of that. And I recommend it to anyone who has the opportunity.
Definitely. I think it'll be maybe a new trend. Who knows?
Yeah, yeah. I think that coaching used to be something that was really only available to top executives, right?
Yes.
Like
yes.
People would get them for their executive leadership. And if you wanted to do coaching on your own, I think it came with a really, really hefty price tag. And so it is still something that we're working on, trying to make it more accessible to each and every individual. And that requires, I think, thinking about it in different ways and how you offer things and just trying to make sure that you can get coaching and help into the hands of everyone at your organization really has this profound effect versus just having leadership have it, which also has its benefits. But once you start touching everyone at your organization, I think the change is pretty profound.
Yeah. And also everybody feels more equal. Well, more equal is also ironic, but equal.
Absolutely.
And speaking about the team, content team, how is it formed? What is the structure?
Oh, we have a really unique structure, actually. So our content team is working on our BetterUp blog. And we've got researchers, academic scientists, and content writers and SEO writers. And because a lot of the things that we are writing on our blog are hard-hitting quarterly reports and research papers, and it's a lot of long-form content, all aimed at just human-powered insights. So as we're returning to work, like what do managers need to know for how to best support their workforce? Or why is investing in well-being going to make the biggest impact on your organization now and also in years to come. So they're covering all sorts of different topics. They're always looking into trends and research and what's happening and how can we connect the data and the science on our end to how our product is actually making an impact in people's lives. So it's about tying together that data, that science, with just the human effect that it has on people so that people understand like, okay, like coaching and support and learning and development and growth, it's inherently human to human connection, but it's also powered by technology. And what, to make it even better, like we can scientifically prove that it helps.
That's a curious approach. Also, I know that you've been working on the workflow, the new workflow at Headspace for copy review.
Yeah. So at Headspace, the situation with many, many startups is you're constantly going through a creative process, a copy process, trying to figure out, okay, listen, we're growing, everyone's growing. So how do we scale appropriately? How do we create a process? For my time at Headspace, it was really looking at how does each team function? Because every team has its own sort of nuance, depending on who the people are that you're working with, whether you're working with an engineering team or you're working with a product team, everyone sort of has different roles, which then influence how processes work. So I always like to learn a team's internal processes because at a company, every team could have very, very different workflows. So I think it's really important to first learn what those workflows are, figure out what best practices are, maybe figure out what they've been doing in the past and say, okay, there's a better way of working on this. But I think it first needs to come from a place of understanding what everyone's role is and who stakeholders are. So what are the appropriate points for check-ins, or even going back even further, if we're doing a project kickoff that involves copy, design, creative, what does that brief look like? What does the kickoff meeting look like? Who needs to be there? And then subsequently, who needs to be at all of the follow-up meetings? Kind of like a RACI format. RACI is responsible, accountable, consulted, and informed. So it kind of sets four different levels of stakeholders. And it's really, really helpful because it gives sort of everyone, not necessarily a lane, but just, okay, well, this person needs to sign off on this. This is the person working on it. This is the person who needs to know the details, and so on and so forth. And that really helps build a framework. And so I always try to stay incredibly flexible and open when it comes to process. But I'm also, one of the things that I'm good at is seeing the picture as a whole, right? From conception to delivery. I like to think about, okay, when does copy need to get involved? When does design need to get involved? When does this person need to sign off? And all the way at the end, when you're hitting production, like, okay, well, have we built enough time for the engineering team to even build this out to get it to its launch date, et cetera, depending on what the product or the project or the entire scope of the project is.
And speaking about the collection of information, it's probably the first stage. What are your tools of trade?
Tools of trade. Do you mind clarifying a little bit for me?
Yeah. So what kind of tools are you using to make this happen, to make this success?
Yeah, good question. So in the past, Jira has been really helpful as just as a project management system. I've also worked in spaces like Asana, but I found that Jira is a pretty good spot for people to upload like links to briefs and just a good place to have a project sort of managed from, because you can create different boards for different teams. So if it's a large scope project and you're working across creative or product and engineering, you can have a parent ticket in Jira where everything lives, but then the different teams can have their sections built out. And so I've always found that really, really helpful. Having a good project manager is so invaluable too, because they keep everything flowing and they keep everyone accountable. So some sort of process where you can see the flow, you can see it's step by step, who's done what, what's getting, what boxes are getting checked off. Sometimes you need that 20 to 30 minute meeting to just get everyone aligned, especially if you're doing a creative review with feedback. So I think those in-persons are really, really helpful as long as you have an agenda and what needs to get done.
Yeah, that makes sense. Do you have any kind of frameworks or maybe, well, any kind of constraints that you put on these meetings to make them more successful?
Ooh, I know that this has been like a really popular topic because
too many meetings
and people are always talking about like, are your meetings effective? And everyone's like, no.
Yeah.
So yeah. I think I definitely fall in the too many meetings category. And I think it's necessary to have a certain amount of meetings when you are working remote, but then you also need to build in that time to get the actual work done. And it, those need to be at least 90 minute blocks you can get in the zone. So I always try to balance my meetings with enough work time, which means cordoning off parts of my calendar to keep it a safe space so that I can actually do the creative work. But I have not figured out the best way to make meetings super effective. I think the one thing that I find really important is just like a team stand up once a week where everyone gets together, shares what their priorities are for the week, if they have any blockers. And that has been so helpful for us as a team.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I see. And you mentioned that you are blocking specific time for creative work, right?
Mm-hmm.
Does it help?
It does help. It does help. Because if you don't fill up that space, for me, I'm one of those people who I need to see everything laid out. And if it's not in the calendar, I won't do it. So if I don't put in like a 3-hour writing block, I'll find myself at the end of the day going, oh, I didn't actually have time to write today. So I, at the beginning of every single week, I make sure that any free time that hasn't been built into a meeting is then thrown into a writing block so that people don't automatically feel like they can book over it. Sometimes I let people book into my writing times if it's very important, but it just helps me balance it out. And it helps me look at my week and go, okay, maybe this week I shouldn't take on that extra project. Maybe I should move it to next week, because if I don't keep the writing time, then I won't have that time to get in the zone and do the best work that I can. So I think one of the most important things you can do is set long blocks for yourself, because something that we do a lot of, especially now, is just task switching. So your mind is constantly going back and forth from emails to Slack to meetings to then you're going to try to shove in some work for 20 minutes, but your brain will just get exhausted. It'll lead to burnout even faster. So I was reading something on time management probably like 5 months ago, actually, that my coach turned me on to. And bucketing your time has been super helpful. So I try to put my meetings in a certain block. Sometimes it doesn't always work out, and that's fine. But I find that like a 60-minute block for writing is kind of the minimum. So I love to, a 2-hour block is my favorite, because you need some time to get into it, let the distractions melt away, and get into that space. Because if I'm going from a 30-minute meeting to 30-minute writing to a 30-minute meeting, it's just, you're going to end the day and feel like you didn't actually get anything done. So my biggest recommendation to people is if you can, I think do everything you can, because especially as an individual contributor where you're still doing a lot of the work and you're not just managing a ton of people, if you don't build in that time, it's hard. Unless you are one of those people who's like, I'll eat dinner and I'll write all night or whatever it is. If that's your flow, go for it. But for me, I've learned what my sweet spots are for when I love to write. And sometimes it's like 9 a.m. to noon is like my favorite time, but that's also like prime meeting time. So on the days that I get that 3-hour block in the morning, and for some reason, no one wants to have a meeting, it's the best. I don't know why, but all of a sudden I've become a morning writer. Find what works for you and try to protect your time.
Going with the flow. Actually, how many years are you writing?
Oh gosh, I've been writing for, I mean, I guess professionally over 10 years.
It's a lot.
Yeah, I mean, I've been writing ever since I was a kid, but I don't know if I could call it writing in the capacity like I do now. It's one of those things where there's this quote I read in a magazine years ago that always stuck with me, and I don't know who to attribute it to, but it said, I was always convinced I would never make it as a writer, so I just kept writing. And that has always kind of been my thing. I mean, ever since I was a kid, I would journal, I would write poetry, I would write songs, I would just write. And writing and reading always really resonated with me. And I don't think I ever fully thought about it like, oh, I'm going to grow up and be a writer. But as I got older, I studied journalism, I started editing, I got into, come from a creative agency background. And eventually, how I wrote and what I wrote evolved over time. And now I just find myself in this space where I absolutely love working with brand voice and tone and executing that across company. And then also thinking creatively of how can that execute into messaging and campaigns. And I'll always have a soft spot for editing because I've done so much editing in my life as well. So yeah, over the years, it's like I've done social, I've done editorial, I've done marketing and brand writing and blog writing and just... I think it's fun to not hold yourself back or say, okay, maybe I only do this, maybe I only do that. For me, it was more of, I just loved writing and I always wanted an opportunity to do it. So anything that came my way, I was like, sure, yeah, I could write for this food magazine for a few years. Why not? I like food. I could do this. So... I think you do what you love if you have that opportunity to do that. And then along the way, you start to figure out like, I might like this more than this. So, and then you go after that.
Yeah. And how did you manage not to burn out? Because 10 years, even if you love what you're doing, it's a lot.
Yeah. I mean, the medium and the kind of work was always shifting between editing and writing. It always felt like everything was a different job, especially now where if you're writing something for a company or a client, for example, there can be so many different materials and types of things that are needed just for one company. So like when I was at the Walt Disney Company, there was so much content to work with across social, across editorial, video. Everything we did was just like this wonderful short form, high engagement content. So it was constantly something new, it was constantly something different. And I think being open, especially these days when everyone sort of feels like they're doing multiple jobs, keeps things fresh for you. So I think though, like you said, it is really easy to sort of get into this burnout mode. So it's like figuring out through experimentation what you like the best, what are the things you love to do versus the things you don't love to do, and try to shape your role around that if you have that opportunity through trial and error. And sometimes you are going to get burned out. Like even those of us who've been trying to not burn out for years, like it just happens. And when it does, I find that the most important thing you can do is just step away. Even if it's just a Monday and you've had two really hard hours and you're like, oh my gosh, I'm burnt out already. The best thing you can do is just, if you have that opportunity, close that laptop for 30 minutes, go outside, take a walk, get a fresh breath of air, just like try to reset, because it's a marathon. It is not a race. Like we're going to be working for many, many years of our lives. And so enjoy it. I used to think that if I just sat at my computer and powered through everything that things were going to be better, but it's not. Like sometimes you need to stop working in order to come back to working in order to do the better work. So I just think take the breaks as you need them, take care of yourself, take those vacations, take that time, because it'll keep you loving what you're doing. And if not, then it'll open you up to realizing, okay, maybe I want to do something else now. But I don't think anyone can just do that one thing without having other things in their life that they love. Maybe there are those people, but for me, it's like, I also like napping and food and karaoke. And if I don't take the time for yoga or hiking, then it just feels unbalanced for me personally. So Mm-hmm. I'm not just like a one track person who's like, yeah, I can sit down and write and edit all the time. Cause that's not true. I definitely need breaks.
Yeah, it definitely helps your mental health. But do you practice any kind of mental health techniques like meditation, maybe, well, I don't know, yoga, whatever?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So meditation, yoga, therapy, coaching, and also massage therapy has been really good for my mental health. So I practice all of it. Obviously at Headspace, we got to do daily meditations in the morning, which was great. I'm currently signed up for this wonderful yoga and pranayama meditation series with one of my favorite teachers of all time in Tucson. His name is Darren Rhodes. And it's been so great to get back to doing short meditations a couple times a week. That's been really wonderful. Yoga has always been really transformative for me because it's about spending time in a place of discomfort. So you're transforming that feeling physically into just sort of how you carry yourself and how you handle emotions. I mean, it goes so much deeper than just getting on a mat and doing poses. You're really breathing through discomfort, which is, to be frank, a lot of life is discomfort. And it's how we understand and move through that discomfort that really helps us, not trying to avoid discomfort. So I think that's incredibly important. And also huge shout outs to my therapist and my coach. And I think all these things really, really impact my physical and my mental health.
Yeah. And is there any specific habit that has most improved your life in the past year?
Absolutely. In the past year, trying to build a routine from this new working from home and remote lifestyle, I realized that getting up in the morning and doing a little bit of movement and like being outside for a few minutes helps me start my day on the best foot. So that's a really good routine to have. And the weeks where I decided to just sort of back away and sleep in and see if that made me feel better, those weeks were actually harder. But I thought, okay, like, I just want to sleep in this week. I don't want to work out a lot. And it ended up not feeling as good for me. So trying to build in 4 to 5 days a week where I get up before work, I do some sort of movement, whether it's low impact, like a walk or a hike, or say I do yoga or HIIT, and then step outside for a few minutes, that just completely changes my attitude for the whole day. So that is a routine that I have realized, like, okay, if I'm feeling bad, then I actually need to power through and put in that extra effort in the morning, even though I don't want to, because it actually helps.
Thank you for sharing. And what about in team collaboration, your personal, maybe frameworks, maybe tactics? How do you collaborate with stakeholders in the team?
Yes, that's a really good question. So, I mean, I trust everyone to be a voice for what they're best at, right? I think the best way to collaborate with people is to help everyone bring their ideas to the table and create a safe space and a sense of belonging. I think when everyone is sharing their thoughts, that's when you're going to get the strongest results. So part of true collaboration is giving people the space to bring all their ideas to the table, because that's when you're going to get those new perspectives that really help you do the best work. And also trusting people to do what they do best. So I love participating in group projects, and I also love working with everyone that I do work with because I trust them. And just like, if someone's good at this, let them take that on completely.
When, let's say you face a situation when a person maybe is overwhelmed and you can see that, do you understand how you can help them in the most kind and gentle way?
Yeah, I think when someone is feeling overwhelmed, that's something that we can all understand and something we can all relate to. So one, I think it's just about reciprocating the understanding of like, yes, this is an overwhelming situation and I can see how you are overwhelmed. And then asking them what they need. I think it's easy for us to interpret maybe what we need when we're feeling overwhelmed, if we can be so lucky to know ourselves that intimately. But something new I've been trying to practice is that maybe someone doesn't deal with overwhelm like I do. We're all very different, unique people. So instead of me trying to assume what they need, I think asking them specifically what they need and what they need to feel supported in that situation is something that I've been trying to do, because we all handle things differently. So, and giving people just some time. Sometimes it's hard to show up because there's so many other things going on personally. Yeah, I just ask and try to support people as much as possible. And then people do the same for me if I need a moment.
I think even noticing that a person has some feelings, and those are real and not something that should be ignored, is already a lot. You cannot really find it easily in every single organization. I think that's great culture. And what was the most useful piece of feedback that you can remember from BetterUp or maybe Headspace?
Yeah, this one's easy for me. I got a piece of feedback a few months ago that really, really stuck with me from a wonderful person at BetterUp who told me, she said, "I don't know if I've given you this piece of feedback yet, but in everything you do and in every meeting you're in," she was like, you just bring it and you share how you're feeling and you handle everyone with respect when you're doing that. But she's like, but no matter who they are and no matter what the project is, like, you're bringing your perspective time and time again. And I just want to encourage you to keep doing that. And that to me was amazing, because I've had many past experiences where I was told the opposite. It's kind of like, your opinion isn't welcome here, or, oh, that really isn't your lane, or just, I think we've all experienced it. And it can be incredibly disheartening, and I think it shuts down people and it shuts down their ideas and their ability to be forthcoming and creative. And once that psychological safety is turned off, it's really hard to turn it back on. So something that a lot of people at BetterUp practice, and that we all try to create a sense of psychological safety for each other. And it's wonderful, because I think this idea that no idea is stupid is just a wonderful way to go through life. That was a really wonderful piece of feedback for me, because it made me realize how many times I've held back in the past, even if it was just a simple thought, because I had just not trusted my own voice before. And so I try to do that for other people as well, and people on my team and people I know. It's just like, we all have a specific perspective and all of it is incredibly valid.
I think it's very powerful, but at the same time, you have to take your time to learn how to do this. Because obviously, if the culture is not appropriate, you have to somehow find yourself changing the culture, or maybe changing only yourself, and maybe then changing the company.
That's a great point to make. I think it's easier to change yourself than to change an entire culture. Not that I don't think we should stand up for what we think is right. I just think it's an awful lot of work. And at the end of the day, it's like, you can probably change your own perspective on things more easily than you can change an entire organization. And also, I don't think we should exist to change other people. And I don't think we can. I think people are who they are. And that's not to say I don't think that people can change throughout their lifetimes. I think we're all capable of incredible transformational change. But it's not going to be because I go up to someone and I'm like, "Oh, do you want to change?" It's going to be because that person they want that change, whatever that is for themselves. And when you find that power inside of yourself that you want to be more open, or whatever it is, you want to start a new routine, like, that's all, your power comes from you. And I think once people realize that, they're going to be amazed at what they can accomplish. So yeah, in those tough situations, because I've been in those situations where, yeah, the culture isn't great, maybe you don't connect intimately or with your manager, like, maybe it's really, really hard, because not every workspace is going to be the healthiest workspace. And I've been in some of those places before, and it is really hard. And in those situations, the thing that just got me through was, all right, I'm going to work on myself, because there, I don't have the complete freedom and flexibility to truly be myself in every area of this job, which is fine. So I'm going to try to just do the best that I can for me.
Mm-hmm. And do you think a person should ignore something, unhealthy pieces of the culture, that if you stumble upon them, you should definitely ignore them and understand that your personal opinion is more important, and these are definitely not healthy practices?
Yeah, it's definitely hard, right? Because I feel like there are things that I have ignored in the past that I shouldn't have, but I also wasn't ready at the time to be that person who could say something about it. And sometimes we gather up the strength to say something and it's still not well received. But I think the value that comes from that is how we feel after we do it. If we do it with the intention of, I need this to stay in my integrity and my values, and I can respectably share something with someone else that either makes me uncomfortable or I feel is wrong, then even if at the end of the day no change came out of it, the change is that I was at least able to say it and still live in my integrity, which makes me feel a whole lot better than keeping it inside and pushing it deep down. So that's what I think the huge change for me has been realizing, like, okay, I could never say anything like I was taught to do in the past, but then weeks from now, I'm going to feel sick and not realize why. Or I can figure out how to communicate these ideas just straightforward and be honest and vulnerable with people. And I guess one of two things could happen. They either are cool with it or they're not. But at the end of the day, I'm at least expressing myself and I'm feeling a lot better.
Yeah, that is a lot already. Mm-hmm. Huge piece.
Yeah, I mean,
progress.
Yeah, exactly. And this is like an ongoing thing. It's something I've tried to work on for years and years and years, and I'm sure I still don't have it down perfectly. So it's really just like, be kind to yourself, love yourself, try your best, and you're just going to keep getting better at it and it's going to be fine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. Maybe I have one question, and this one is also, yeah, about vulnerability, I think.
Oh, so, okay.
How has a failure set you up for later success? So maybe a mistake.
Oh, yeah. I mean, failure is success, right? Because it means you're trying. And I think that, like, if we try to avoid failure, then we're not going to reach, I don't know, the level of success that I think we're fully capable of. I was just reading last night that, like, gosh, I hope I don't get this wrong, that Thomas Edison was told by a school teacher he was stupid, but then later on, it took him 9,000 failed experiments before he created the light bulb. Michael Jordan didn't even make it onto his high school basketball team because he lacked the skill. So it's just like, remember that passion can get you there. Passion and hard work to get to that place of success, you need to be vulnerable. And sometimes vulnerable means failing. And I've experienced so many failures and so many mishandlings and things I could have done better, whether it was work or how I handled a situation with another person. And I think it's really easy to stop and like get down on yourself. So something that I'm just trying to do more and more is like, okay, that was a learning experience. I really hope to do it better next time and just learn from it and take a beat before moving on to the next thing. So don't be afraid of failing, because there's something to learn there.
Yeah, just when you are failing, you are thinking like, oh my gosh,
right?
This is not success. It can't be.
But you're getting one step closer every time.
Yeah. It should be a sheet of paper where you write this down and just look at it. And because you definitely cannot think about it when you are failing.
Yeah, you just gotta put that gold star up on that chart and move on.
Yeah, that's right. So thank you so much for your wonderful answers. Those were really deep and insightful. And yeah, I learned a lot.
Oh, that's great. I hope people enjoy listening. Thank you for having me, Mary. It was such a lovely time.